product, and something we could in principle do in paper, but in practice we want to automatize it and to do it in an efficient way. This was one of the problems that you saw yesterday. And then as an application, we will use this capability of dealing with oscillators in an efficient way to study the anharmonic oscillator. And we will compute the spectrum of the one-dimensional anharmonic oscillator. So given that the physics is quite basic, namely we just want to deal with AA daggers and with an anharmonic oscillator, this is mostly a mathematical lecture. So what do I want to tell you about? I want to tell you about how do we take some oscillators, some A plus A dagger, and dagger we write like we do in text, slash dag, and we put escape, slash dag, escape, and then we enter a dagger. And we have some oscillators. Is this too small? Should I zoom in a little bit more? Is this good? Or do you want more? Or is this good? So suppose we have some oscillators like this. It can be this over square root of 2. And we have a product of a bunch of them. Say we have this, another one with eventually different coefficients. It can be a 3. It can be a whatever. Minus I over square root of 2i. And we have a bunch of oscillators like this, and we want to manipulate them. We want to use some algebra to get to reorder them, for example, and so on. So the first thing is we should put some dots, because if we don't put some dots, this is just a product. So now we just expand, and it just gives a cube, a dagger, a dagger cube, and so on. Then it has no clue that this is non-commutative. So we have to put some dots. So we can use dots, but dot is already used. Mathematica already knows. We can use dot. Dot will be fine. But to be safe, we could ask, is there another symbol I can use which is not dot? So we can just click escape dot escape. And this is a new symbol. You see the dot changed a little bit. You have still the original dot and the new dot. And if you ask, what is this object? So we have A escape dot escape B. And we ask, what is this thing? So we ask, what's the full form like Jason was doing? And it is called center dot. And what is this center dot? Is it like dot? We ask, what is center dot? So we put question mark, what is center dot? What is center dot? And you see center dot is nothing. Because I misspell it. So center dot just displays S. So it is just something cute. Okay, so there are some functions like this. For example, circle times is another one that is nothing. It is just displays nicely as something nice. So if I do circle times, of AB, it just displays as a nice tensor product A tensor B. So these are nice functions that are there that we can use just to have some nice output. So let's use center dot to indicate our non-commutative product. So we put center dot. And now, you see, this now is center dot of some object. I can ask, what is this? What's the full form? And it's center dot, and it has three arguments. It's a bit hard to see. Perhaps in tree form it's easier. So you see you have center dot, and out of center dot, out of the title, three branches come out, which are the three arguments. One is the first argument, the second argument, and the third argument. But now, of course, we want to do something like expand, and of course, expand does nothing, because there is no, mathematics does not have the right of taking things out of this center dot. So what is the best way to think? Well, let's do the following. Let's say apply some rules, and you see I'm doing this. I'm putting slash slash dot. Let me quit the kernel. You see, rules is black because I've been playing with it before. So we will define some rules and say apply it as many times as needed. Slash slash dot is applied many times. So let's define these rules. So what is the first rule we want? We want to say, let's put here a set of rules. And the first rule can be, if we have some number times an operator, we want to take the number out of center dot. So we say we have something before, something, it can be any number of elements. In particular, it can be no elements at all. And then we have something after. And again, I click escape dot escape to make it a center dot and not a regular dot. So we have something before, then a number times an operator, and then something after. And we want to say take the number out. The number comes out, and then we get before, center dot the operator, center dot after. Right? But how we have to tell? Only if number is a number. So we put this condition that Jason taught us to have. If number is a number, and we can use these test functions, numeric q of number. Okay? And this will say if what we call number there is numeric, it is taken out of center dot. So let's check what happens now. So we do it, and you see that it's already better. The square root of 2, square root of 2, and 4 all came out and gave 4, and the I also came out, and it gave minus I over 4 times something. Okay, so we are in the right direction. It's already a little bit better. Now we want to say, we want to go on adding a new rule to our list. We want to say that we, if we have a sum of two operators, that we can distribute. So now we have something before, and then we have one operator plus another operator, and we want to say replace this by before dot operator one dot what is after plus the same thing with two. So open up parentheses if you find them. Okay, plus operator two. And now when we try again, it's a bit better. Now it opened up the parentheses. Now we can do slash slash expand. Remember, this slash slash at the end means apply expand. This is the kind of example that we don't want to put brackets. First apply the rules, then expand. And it's already very good, you see. Now it's just a sum of terms. And we have some A, some AA daggers, and so on. So now all we have to do is order them. Is say, now let's order. If A appears, let's say we want all the A's to the right. So we say that if we have something where A and A dagger are not in what we would call a canonical order, so if we have something where A is to the left, and then there is an A dagger, right? So if A and A dagger are not ordered, it's easy. Replace it by put the right order. A dagger A plus one. So we just remove and we put before dot after, right? And now we can do it. And now it just reordered. You see, now it just reordered. There's only the last line is clear, right? There's A cube, A dagger, AA, and so on. And then when reordering and removing that term, at some point we add center dot of just a single element. And center dot of a single element for us is just the element, right? So we just say center dot of a single element is the element. Okay? And then when we apply it, if we have some random example, we reordered and we get now what the expression is when all the A's are to the right and all the A daggers are to the left. So this is the kind of thing that is very, very useful to know. So this is a very important example. And of course, now you can take this example and generalize it a bit and implement algebra of gamma matrices, SU2 algebra, whatever you want. The kind of ideas are the same. So is there any question about any point of this example? Okay, let me start by the order. First, there. Can you speak up a bit louder? Right. Why do I have always this before and after always, right? In any place, why do I have this before and after? Because this is a pattern. If otherwise, if I would, let's remove this rule. Let's comment this rule. You can comment something in Mathematica by putting parentheses star and then star parentheses. So now this rule is commented. Now if we apply, we have this. And now we can say, let's apply this rule. And now let's apply what you said. Let's say that if we have A dagger A, replace this by, let's put the other order, minus one or plus one, right? And now it does nothing. It does nothing because Mathematica does not find the pattern center dot of A with A dot, with A dagger. It's not there. If you look at what this is, and if we see the full form, okay, this is a bit tough to see. So, but let's take one of them where you could think that this pattern is there, like this here, and ask what is the full form of this. And you see it is not there. It is center dot, but it does not have two arguments. It has three arguments, the first, the second, and the last. Okay? It is just not there. So whereas if you ask what is the full form of this, it is two arguments. So there is no way this replacement could work. Okay? Does it answer your question? Now, sometimes it's useful to play with attributes of functions. So I could do the following. I could say, let's set the attributes of this center dot to be flat. And flat means, when a function is flat, it means associative. It means that I can put brackets wherever I want. Okay? If I do it, then this object here, which has the same full form, do we find the pattern A dagger A now? Well, now we do, because it's true that the first expression, I can think of this as A dagger dot with parentheses, A dot A dagger, right? Because now we are telling Mathematica, if you want, put brackets and reorganize the parentheses. And now, indeed, I can do a replacement, and you see Mathematica did detect that because this was flat, that this pattern was there. But then I have to play with attributes, and sometimes it's good to play with attributes, sometimes it's not. So I have two ways of solving this problem of having this algebra. One way is to assign a replacement rule. So I just say, if you look at some pattern, apply some rules. There was another option, which was to say, let me define a function center dot, and let me tell Mathematica that center dot has a bunch of properties. And then instead of doing it in this way with a set of rules, I will say center dot, I will start defining a function. I would start with something like this and put an equal sign. I would define and say this is defined as something, and I would have a bunch of definitions for my center dot. If I would do it like that with definitions for center dot, it's useful to assign attributes. If I do it with replacements, it's not useful because, for example, if I have before with three underscores, which means in particular nothing, then Mathematica can start doing lots of replacements everywhere in smaller places where I don't want her to do. So the basic message is, if you want to do it with replacements, it's rarely good to mess up with the attributes. If you want to define the function center dot, which would be another option, then attributes would be a good idea. Yeah, now I suspect that because I have attributes, it will probably screw up, yeah. Now it would start, it's still okay. But it's often, well, okay, I don't want to produce a bug if I don't need to, but anyway, So back to what we were saying. So here is the example. There were other questions. Yes. So how would we do center dot power? So let's say, suppose you want to say that I have a to the 7 and then a dagger to the 5, right? A dagger to the power 5, and so on. And I want to input this object here, right? So there are several ways we could do it. We could say, let's make a table of, so we can say power. We can say, let's define center power. Let me see what's the best way. So for example, here I could do the following. I could do a table of a's. I say put 7 a's, right? Followed. So join it. This is a way of doing join. Join is nice because you join two objects. You can use this syntax where you put tilde, join, tilde. Then say join a table of a daggers. Okay, 5 of them. Now we have a table. And now what we want to do, we want to say instead of having list of some elements, replace list by center dots, right? If you see the tree form of this, it's already perfect. Except that we have list of something and we would like center dot of something. So we use this thing that Jason told us yesterday, that we can replace the head of an expression by using double let. And here is how I would implement the previous expression. Okay? So these are the kind of things that you typically do to, if you want to repeat, say, A several times and so on. Okay? So for example, I could go at this example, and I could now want to try to recognize this a dagger, and put a dagger cube, and so on. But anyway, there is many things we can do, but I just wanted to work out the simplest possible example. OK, so this is what I wanted to tell you about algebra. Now I want to consider an application. Yeah. Yeah, can you speak a bit louder, or Kolya, can you do your chairman job and microphone around? There's no microphone, so you cannot do your job, okay. So, yeah. No? Yeah. So I'm implicitly assuming that I can, yeah. So what is being asked is it true that I can flip A and A dagger at any position and it doesn't matter? That's true, yeah. Of course, it's implicit in the rules that I'm giving, that I'm telling Mathematica, take something before, take something after, and flip them, and it doesn't matter how you group and which ones you do first. So yes. Of course, then, for example, then you could not just say before with any number and after with any element. Then you'd have to specify an order. And if you give me an example, we can work it out. But I don't want to do it in full generality. It's useless. Tell me an example in the break, and we can work it out. Any other question? Very good. So now, as an application, I want to do an harmonic oscillator by what is called this method, which is a Rayleigh-Ritz. Rayleigh-Ritz just means that you write the you consider the harmonic some perturbation of the harmonic oscillator. It can be a huge perturbation. In fact, it can be so huge that it can remove completely the m square phi square. And it can be some big perturbation. And you write that Hamiltonian in the base of the original harmonic oscillator. You truncate at some big size of the matrix, and you diagonalize. OK, so that's what we want to do. So what we want to do is take some ket. Ket is actually defined. So if you write ket of n, it has some nice output. So you can just work always with this nice output. So as Jason was explaining, you can select from the output and use it as input directly. So we can use with this ket. This ket for Mathematica is just ket. And we want to deal with to work with these kets. And with these kets, act with the Hamiltonian and create a matrix for the matrix elements of this Hamiltonian. So we define some p, some nice p, which is just our a dagger minus a over square root of 2i. And we also define some position. I could use x, but I like using dsx, which is some calligraphic. It's cute. A plus a dagger over square root of 2. So we define p and x. Right? So here is defined p and x. And now what is my Hamiltonian? My Hamiltonian is just p center dot p, p square, that acts on the ket. Right? I want the action of my Hamiltonian plus x dot x acting on x. This will be the harmonic oscillator. So let's check first that we know how to do harmonic oscillator. So we do p dot x, and so on. And now we are going to use some rules. Let's copy the rules back here. I'm going to modify them slightly. So now I actually don't care about this last line. I don't care about it because I'm not going to use algebra of a and a dagger. I could do it, but I don't need to. Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to teach Mathematica how do you act on a ket. So I would say that if you have something, before there's something, then there is an a, and then there is a ket of n. And again, I could use the nice symbol or just write ket. It's the same thing. So what happens? It replaces by square root of n times what was there before. So in other words, by giving a representation, we don't need to give an algebra. The algebra is an outcome. And if we have the same thing but with a dagger, and if we act with a dagger, we get the same thing with a ket raised by one. Okay, and now we could just act with this Hamiltonian and say, apply these rules as many times as needed, then expand the result. OK, and we get n plus a half. OK, I did not put the 1 half of p squared. I put just p squared, right? So I can put 1 half. And we get n plus half times the state. Okay, so it is just the harmonic oscillator as we expect. Okay, so now let me do something here. Let me put here a minus 1 and here a plus 0. So let me format text color and put it red to indicate that this looks like something wrong that I'm doing. So all I'm doing here is starting to count the oscillator not from 0 but from 1. And why? Because I'm going to make it into a matrix, and matrices start counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I don't want to have to shift later. So this is exactly the same thing. Now if I apply, I get n minus 1. So the ground state is n equals 1, the first excited state n equals 2, and so on and so forth. Okay? So we can put here a comment in text, say, note that 1 is the ground state. etc. Okay? Okay, so now we have this harmonic oscillator implemented and checked. And now we can do the anharmonic oscillator. So we can write our action on our cat. Let's call it H on cat, action on cat. And what is it? Now instead of putting 2, we put 4. Okay? So we act 4 times, and we ask to apply the rules. So I'm doing pure anharmonic oscillator. Just x, just the potential is just x to the 4. I apply my rules several times. And here is what I get. I get a bunch of cats that some of n, some are n plus 2, some are n minus 2. So this is a clear example. What do I want to do here, obviously? I want to say apply the following function that collects whatever is the outcome, collect it in something, in cats of something. Okay? So this is good. So it goes and organizes. You see, I created a function with this pure function. This is the argument. And this is the function. So here I define the function, right? It collects whatever is to the left in cat, and then, and that's it. And the function collect, I can put here comma simplify to say to which prefactor of the cat simplified. Now here is the nice outcome. So you see the Hamiltonian acting on cat n gives this. It gives something proportional to n, something to n minus 2, something to n plus 2, and something to n plus minus 4. So this is our action on our cat. Now I want to generate a matrix out of this. So how do we generate a matrix? A useful way of generating a matrix, this matrix that will have zeros almost everywhere, right? It will only have diagonal terms at n, n plus minus 2, and n plus minus 4. So it's almost diagonal matrix. It has just a strip of 3 lines that are not zero. So there is this comment, when the matrix is sparse, you can say, let me define a sparse array. And you can say a sparse array, for example, where the diagonal elements go to 1. For example, the element 2, 5 is, is alpha. And you give us a set of rules like this. You can say, for example, the element I and j, where j is I plus 1, goes to 9. And you say, let's generate a matrix of size 20 by 20. Okay, and this generates a sparse array. And if I want to see it as a normal matrix, I can put normal, I can see it as a matrix. And you see, this gives a matrix which has in the diagonal elements 1, off diagonal elements 9, and there is an alpha there alone at position 2, 5, like I asked. You see? So this is how we put a sparse array. Okay? So is it clear? So now we want to do this. We want to take our cats, and out of these cats, transform it into a sparse array that gives my Hamiltonian. So I have to convert something that, so we would know how to do it by hand trivially, right? So by hand, what we would say is, for example, from the first line, we would say, take n and m, and if m is equal to n minus 4, replace this by this stuff. Right? This is how we will do it by hand. So replace this by this stuff. And then we'll do the same thing for the 5 elements, and we will define in this way some make matrix, which would be the argument of sparse array. So we will do this, and dot, 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 and so on. So let me put this as text. So this is the kind of thing we want. We want to say that these are the elements of the matrix, and this will have 5 elements. Okay? So this is our goal. So let's do that. So we have our H on cat, and we want to manipulate it and to say the following. So let me do it and explain. So look for all cats. Say, look at cases, look at something times cat of something. Okay? So this is a constant times cat of something. If you find it, okay, and look for all of them. So we can say look for all of them anywhere. Okay? So this infinity means look for this anywhere, but actually we don't need it. And here, you see, let me show you in table form. It's not bad. So it looked for all the states and therefore, now to each of them, we want to replace it by our goal. So we say that when you find this object, this pattern, replace this pattern by a rule of this sort. So what is this rule? Replace this pattern by a rule that says that n and m, okay? When m is equal to a, where a is the argument of the cat, right? goes to C. Do you agree? Do you see what's happening? I'm saying that look at C times cat and say that it replaces the elements when M is equal to A by C. And it almost works. Okay. It's almost perfect. It's almost exactly what we want. It's a list of five rules, except that there is some dollar sign close to which N and dollar sign close to which M. And it would be perfect if these dollar signs were not there. So this is related, of course, to the order where Mathematica evaluates things. And because it's inside some replacement rule, and because it's in green, Mathematica is creating some local variables. And at the end, if we now see it, we know very well what we want to do. I just want to replace that and that dollar sign. I just want to erase the dollar sign. OK? So our goal is to erase dollar signs in this expression. So perhaps there is a faster way of doing this that bypasses this. But it's trivial to see what we want to do. And what we want to do is just to say that, OK, n dollar sign goes to n, and m dollar sign goes to m. And now it works, and it's perfect. But let me explain why it works, because you could think that it should not work. Why could you think that it should not work? Because you say that, what is this? This is a symbol, n dollar with an underscore. So she should not find n dollar sign. N dollar sign is not there. What's there is this symbol. But again, as we saw also yesterday, this, if we ask what is the full form, it is actually n star is there alone. You see, this is called pattern of n star and then blank, saying that it's not specifying the head, actually, it's blank. So indeed, replacing n star by whatever does what you expect to do. It just replaces the n star by whatever variable and keeps the underscore because it is indeed recognized there. So it's totally legitimate. OK. So this is it. There are other ways of doing it. But here is our make matrix. OK. So here is our make matrix. And you see what I've done here, let me tell you. So make matrix is this, but I'm seeing it there as a table form. But I don't want make matrix to be the table form of this, because table form is not a matrix anymore. It is just a nice outcome. So I put some parentheses such that make matrix is defined inside the parentheses. And once it is defined, only after it's defined, I show its table form so that I can visualize it nicely. Another way that if you are a beginner, you would do, you would first define make matrix, and then write make matrix and do table form to visualize it. You see, a way of saving a bit of time is you put some parentheses and you go on. OK, so now we are in business. So this was the hard part, was to do something that we would know how to do by hand trivially, so how to convert this into a set of rules. But now that this is done, now it's very simple. Now we just say, let's make a matrix with those rules. And we choose some size of the matrix, m by m. And we define some m, say 150. OK? So this is a 150 by 150 matrix. And this is our Hamiltonian. And we can ask to see it. OK? And it's huge, so Mathematica doesn't even show. I can show more, and it's OK. It's a big matrix. Perhaps what we want to do instead of see it, we might want, for example, to visualize it. So we ask array plot. And this gives me a plot of my matrix H. You see, can you see that there are five lines here in the bottom, and they are darker because the elements are becoming big, because the Hamiltonian becomes big elements for large wave functions. And here you can almost not see them because they are smaller. Okay? So this is our matrix, which is almost diagonal. OK? So this is our H. Okay. So now, another thing we want to do now, we want to find the eigenvalues of H. But to find the eigenvalues of H, right now, H, right? So let's look at H. So let's look at the first 20 elements of H. So the first 20 by 20 block. Remember, this is 1 up to 20. So this extracts a block. So this much we can see easily. You see, this block is full of square roots and so on of exact numbers. So if I try to diagonalize this matrix, Mathematica will try to diagonalize it analytically because it's full of analytic numbers. So what I should do is tell that this is numeric, apply numeric to it. And now, it's just a bunch of numbers. Now Mathematica, when diagonalizing, will look for eigenvalues in numerical form, which is what we want. And let me do the following. Let me apply numeric. And you see, I could do this. This is a bit silly, because I'm saying numeric of something, and then apply it to, but I mean, this is, but now I can put an argument, and let's say that I do it with 50 digits. So now I can ask again, let me show you. So if I take elements 1 up to 5, 1 up to 5, and I visualize it, now each entry has many digits of precision. Okay? So I have a 150 by 150 matrix, each element has 50 digits. This is our Hamiltonian. And now we want to find the eigenvalues of this Hamiltonian, the smallest 10. And smallest 10, you put minus 10, because Mathematica orders them by the biggest absolute value. So you ask the smallest 10. And this is where sparse array methods are very useful, because Mathematica has very efficient methods. When you deal with a matrix that has many zeros, it's very easy to compute the first few or the last few eigenvalues. So now we can ask for what are the eigenvalues of H, say the first 10 eigenvalues. And once we get the result, we can sort them. And this is what we call our energies. So here are the energies of the anharmonic oscillator. 1.0603 and so on. And of course, we want to check how precise this method is. Perhaps I'm using 50 digits, but perhaps it's totally silly because perhaps the truncation will be such that only the first two digits are correct. So I'm going to compare this with known results, which are in this hidden section soon. But for now, these are our energies of the anharmonic oscillator. Okay? So let's just hope that we got it right and plot the corresponding wave functions. So here are the wave functions of the harmonic oscillator. They are just some Hermite polynomials, right, as we know. So if we have time, I will also derive this. But of course, everyone knows this, so there's no point. You see there is here n minus 1 instead of n, because as I said, we start counting with n equal 1, not n equal 0. So n equal 1 is the ground state. Okay, and now we can plot these wave functions. Okay, so now we can plot these wave functions. We can say, let's take the eigenvalues. Okay, let's take the eigenvalues. Okay, so now I want to plot. So what I want to plot is the following. So to plot, what I will do is the following. I'll plot the potential. And then I will plot the ground state. And then I will plot the first excited state plus the energy of the first excited state. And so on, such that we can see all the wave functions. So this will be ground state plus its energy and so on. So let's extract the eigen system, which gives me the eigenvalues and the energies. And this will be useful. So this part here, OK, so let me actually change the order a little bit. Here are the energies. And let's first just be impressed by how precise it is, because here are the exact values of the energies. OK? And let's take these energies. Let's take only the first six, because we only have six to compare. And you can see, if you compare with this table of known values, and the right column is extracted from solving quantum mechanics with some exact WKB methods that Voros and others developed, that all digits are correct. So in 1 second, you see, we got all digits right, as many as they are known. And this is the right column, so you can check that it's 1.0603.6209 and so on, that you get all digits right for the right column. And the left column is called EKTBA, and this TBA stands for thermodynamic bit and Zatz. Because there is a beautiful method, actually, for solving the anharmonic oscillator using so-called thermodynamic bit and Zatz or Y-system methods that Dorian Tateo discovered. And if I have 5 minutes at the end, I will comment on the brief idea of this method. But the problem that John prepared for the access for this afternoon is precisely to solve these thermodynamic bit and Zatz equations and get the energies of the anharmonic oscillator in that way, which is a totally different method. And this gives the column on the left. Okay? But as we see, it's a very efficient method. In fact, this method is exponentially precise. That's why we managed to get so many digits, because this is an exact matrix, which is very, very close to diagonal. And therefore, provided we make it big enough, the method is really very good. So in particular, here we get all these digits are correct. the last line. You should compare with the one on the right. No, the one on the left. Ah, this one on the left has more digits. 3, 5, 9, 5, and I have 9, 4. Right? But this is the last digit. They are probably not sure about the last digit. They are wrong, I would claim. But we can test. We can increase a little bit more and check if this 4 is 4 or it's 5. Okay, so Collie is complaining about the 5 in the last line. So the toughest eigenvalue and so on. But it's the last digit. I'm not sure if they trust. Something is wrong. It's a very serious problem. Yeah. Okay, very good. So now I want to do this plot, this exercise of plot. And it's, of course, very simple, but concerning the usage of pure functions, it's a bit sophisticated, at least the way I implemented here. So I wanted to make sure that you understood the bottom line, which is that things are working. And now let's try to plot it. So let's see how do we plot it. So let's first extract not only the eigenvalues, but the full eigensystem, that is eigenvalues and eigenvectors, of this Hamiltonian corresponding to the first 10 excited states. Okay, and here it is. So we run it, and here we get first are the eigenvalues. You see, these eigenvalues, 1.06 up to 43, are our eigenvalues. And then we have a list of lists. And the first element of the list, so if I double click here to select the full element, is a vector. And this is the first eigenvector. And then I have the second eigenvector, third eigenvector, and so on. OK? So we can apply \n just so that it's smaller and we can visualize better. These are the eigenvalues. And this is the first vector. And this is the second eigenvector. And this is the third eigenvector, and so on. OK? Good. So now, great. So now what do we want to do? So let me do the following. I don't want to have first a list of eigenvalues and then a list of eigenvectors. I want to have one eigenvalue corresponding eigenvector, one eigenvalue corresponding eigenvector, and so on. Okay? But that's very easy. I just transpose the matrix. Okay? So if I transpose, now I have, you see, the first one eigenvalue, one eigenvector, and so on. And by the way, now that it's transposed, I can even sort. And it gives me the first eigenvalue and the corresponding vector, and so on. Whereas before, it, of course, did not make sense to sort, because the first line is eigenvalue, the second line is vector. It's like sorting potatoes and apples, right? Sorry? We could chop. Why not chop? So Jason is saying this 10 to the minus 60 is clearly numerical error. So why don't we just chop? We can chop. And indeed, what are we seeing here in this chop? We are seeing that odd, even wave functions don't have expansion in other Hermite polynomials. And odd wave functions don't have expansion in even Hermite polynomials. That's right. That's dangerous. So let's see. Do we have two zeros in a row? We don't. It might be OK. Here we do have many zeros. I don't know if we want to shop. But since we are going to plot, it's definitely OK to shop. Yeah, chop is a dangerous function if you are dealing with something that's very small, but you trust that you have enough precision. But I don't know. We can compare with chop and without chop. Let's comment chop and put back chop and see if it changes the plots later. OK, very good. So that's it. Okay. One second. Yeah. So these are our eigensystems. So these are our eigenvalues and eigenvectors. OK. And now, what do we want to do? We want to take a given eigenvector, for example, take the first one, and the first one again, the eigenvalue and then the eigenvector. And we want to take this eigenvector and dot it with the basis of Hermite polynomial. So let's construct our basis, because we want to convert to this basis. So we write the basis. And what is this basis? We apply, we consider, say, a table of phi nx when n runs from 1 to anyone. What should I put here? M, the size of my big matrix, which was 150. So I will have the first 150 Hermite polynomials. Okay? And I can just compute them. And you see, the first one is just a ground state, just exponential. The second one is x times exponential. 4x squared minus 2 times exponential, and so on and so forth, and the output becomes too big. We don't want to see it. So we put semicolon at the end not to see the output. This is our basis. And then what we want to see? We want to say, take the second element of this eigenvalue. You see, take the second element, which is this vector. So let's take the second element and dot it with the basis to convert to the basis of harmonic polynomial. What else we want to do? Shift it, as we said, by the energy such that we can plot it. So shift it by the first value. So note, yeah, so shift it by the first value. So this is adding these shifts of energies. And do this, so this is a function that does that, takes the second element and shifts dots with bases and adds the first element to the result. And now we create this function, right? Create this function here. Okay, we can simplify just to collect some exponentials, it doesn't matter. Create this function, and then apply this function to each element of this eigenvalue, to the first one, to this one, and so on. Remember that this slash that does this. It applies to each element of the list. Okay? And this is what we want to plot. Okay, very good. And now we can do it. Now we can plot. We can just ask plot to plot from x equal minus 4 to 4, say. This will be our new plot. Because the previous plot that we want to do, which is not the new plot, which is just the plot. I don't even have it here. Why don't I have it here? Okay, doesn't matter. Okay, so this is our new plot. It plots these 10-way functions. And now we want to ask plot, for example, we could have plot the potential x to the 4 from x, I don't know, some value to some value. Of course, I don't know. I know very well. I checked which one looks nice. And show both, show the plot and the new plot. Here, let's put some nice styles, and let's put plot style, black and thick. I'm not sure if I need this or not. And here are all the wave functions of the anharmonic oscillator. You see, plotted on top of the potential, each one shifted by the corresponding energy. You see the ground state on the has no zeros, then there's one zero, and so on. And we could add some dashed lines for the energies if we want, and so on and so forth. Okay? Very good. So this is what I wanted to tell you today. So this is an example of several uses of Mathematica. And now in the remaining minutes, I want to just do something that I did not prepare, but which is, should be relatively trivial, because it's also something that is very important and people typically get confused, which is about replacements in differential equations. So suppose we want to check that these Hermite polynomials solve the harmonic oscillator. So let's write the equation for the harmonic oscillator. So it's derivative of phi of x, second derivative, right? So let's call it psi. Right? So second derivative, and we can select and convert to input to make it nice. So it's second derivative of x, right? With a minus sign, it's p squared plus x squared, right? Times psi of x. And the claim is that this should be equal to 2n minus a half. Again, minus 1 half because not minus 1 and not plus 1 because of our shift, times psi of x, right? So this is our claim for the harmonic oscillator. This is what we want to check. And what we want to say, and on the other hand, we have this function phi, which we can ask, what is phi? And phi is this Hermite polynomials. And I want to say, replace psi by this Hermite polynomials. So I can go to my Schrodinger equation. Schrodinger. And I can say, take Schrodinger and replace, you would say, psi of something. Replace this by phi of n and something. And when you do it, this is what people always try. It doesn't work because it replaces in two places. But this psi prime prime did not replace. But again, that's OK because it's not Mathematica's fault. It's your fault. Because if you ask, what is the full form of this? There is no psi of x. There is the function second derivative of psi applied to x. So Mathematica recognizes psi, but there is no psi of x. Again, there is second derivative of psi applied to x. So So what we want is say the function psi is the function phi of n comma x, right? This is what it means. The function psi is this function. So I put here, I'd say this is the function, right? Psi is this function. Psi is the function phi n comma argument, okay? And then, now I'm getting a bit nervous. Oof. There you go. Okay, so it's exactly one, but I started a bit late. So now, so I'm done with the mathematical part. I would like to spend 5 minutes motivating a little bit this afternoon's exercise. So it's just, I just want to give you a flavor of where this thermodynamic bit and that comes from, so that you see that it's quite cute that it's a totally, totally different method, and it's quite impressive that such method exists at all, and that it gives very precise results. In a way, it's kind of an analytic solution of the anharmonic oscillator. Okay, so can I just switch to Blackboard, please? Thanks. Okay, so there is just this basic idea of studying differential equations. So what we want to do is study the some differential equation, minus psi prime prime plus x to the 4 psi equal to some energy times psi, right? And what we want to do is find wave functions which decay on both ends at minus infinity and plus infinity. But let's for now forget about the fact that we are solving a quantum mechanical problem and think of solutions of this equation as functions of x and of energy, energy being a continuous parameter. So we take some value for energy, some value for energy belonging to C, it can be real or complex, and then we find the wave solutions to this differential equation. And what do we find? We find that, for example, at large x, we know that these wave functions behave as e to the minus x cubed with some constant. So you see that, imagine you are at very large x, and you have one of the solutions of the differential equation, the one that decays, right? You see that you start with a solution that decays, and then as you move in the complex plane, at some point it explodes. Namely, it explodes when the phase of x is I pi over 3. What you find is that in the complex plane of x, there are these important lines. The line, this horizontal line, this line with phase 2i pi over 3, if I have things correct. So there should be, six lines. So another one here. Okay, all these angles are the same, alpha, alpha. So alpha is 2 pi over 6, which is pi over 3. And what happens is that if a wave function decays exponentially, here it explodes here, and then you could say, and here it decays again. But that's wrong. That's wrong. Because here it decays, here it explodes, and what will typically happen if you go on is that it still explodes. So this is the statement that if you have a differential equation which has a decaying solution and an exploding solution, the decaying solution is well defined because it decays. But the exploding one is not well defined because I can have the exploding one and add a bit of small one and I never see it. So as soon as I start with small and then evolve to exploding, I don't know if there is a subleading exponential there, a bit of small. So when I move to the next sector, I still have exploding. So the solution starts small, then explode, and then it stays exploding. Namely, the analytic the asymptotics of the correct analytic continuation is not the analytic continuation of the asymptotics. And this is what's called Stokes' phenomena. Okay? So these problems have this phenomena, Stokes' phenomena, that if you start a solution that is small here, then you have to be, it's very non-trivial what's the behavior of this guy here. So then what we do is the following. We start with this problem here, and we look at what is well-defined. Big guys are not well-defined. But for any energy, there is a small solution here. Let's call it S of X, and put an index 1 to indicate that it's associated to the first line. That is the guy that is small here. And let's define S2, the solution of this differential equation that is small here. S3, the guy that is small here. S4 here, S5 here. and S6 here. Then let's consider Wronskians SA with SP that are functions of energy only, where this is just the Wronskian, right? So this is just take two solutions of the differential equation and consider its Wronskian. And its Wronskian, right, is just independent of x. It's just a function of energy. So I take two solutions and I compute its Wronskian. And the goal is, instead of solving this differential equation, let's try to bootstrap these Wronskians by studying its analytic properties in the energy. And the claim is that we can do it. And the basic idea is that if I change x, I don't have control. But if I change x and change the energy as well, smoothly, adiabatically, I can indeed find the relations that tell me that as I rotate S1, I go to S2, and so on, if I also rotate the energy. So you should see the you can ask me later for more details. But the claim that should be not easy to accept is that these Wronskians obey some nice functional equations. Again, the important point is that they are only functions of the energy. There is no x dependence at all, right? No x dependence. And they obey nice functional equations. That furthermore, when you have some nice functional equations, you can often convert them into integral equations. Okay? One example is, suppose I tell you that I have an equation of the form f of x plus I plus f of x minus I equal to some g, which is known of x. Then you can Fourier transform this equation. This is just Fourier transform of the same thing with some shifts. Then you undo the Fourier transform, and you get something, ignoring some details, f of x equal to something that is antiperiodic that cancels this, some kind of zero mode, plus some integral of some kernel, theta minus theta prime, times this function g of theta. And this kernel, this convolution comes because in Fourier it was just multiplication. So it's often the case that you start from here, go to the Wronskians, get nice functional equations, get nice integral equations. Then you have some nice integral equations to this Wronskian. And then what do you do? Then you say, well, if I look at what does it mean to be at the energy of the harmonic oscillator? It means that what I define as S1 and what I define as S4, they are actually the same wave function. If for some energy, the guy that is small here is the same as the guy that is small here, then this is the definition of a physical energy. So then, once I solve for this, the energies are the zeros of this bracket, S1 with S4. So you solve this thermodynamic Bittensatz equation, which are what these integral equations are, and then you look for the zeros of one of them, and by doing so, at once, by plotting this function and looking at the various zeros, you get all the energies at once of the anharmonic oscillator. You just go to this function, plot it, and look at all the zeros, and these are the energies of this anharmonic oscillator. So in the afternoon, what you'll be doing, one of the exercises that you might want to do, is to take this integral equation, solve them in Mathematica by iteration, for example, plot them, and compare the zeros of the function that you get with the numbers that we got in today's lecture on this notebook that I'm going to put online now. And finally, let me end with the following remark, which is that these integral equations are equations that appear in other branches of physics which have nothing to do with quantum mechanics. Namely, these so-called thermodynamic Bittensatz equations are equations that also appear when describing the energy of some quantum integrable quantum field theories in two dimensions. So something completely different from what we started from. And you might ask, is there some physics in this duality that tells us that some integral equation describing some physics of some two-dimensional quantum field theory somehow are also governing the spectrum of the anharmonic oscillator? And you might ask, is this just a mathematical coincidence, or is there some physics behind? And in fact, no one knows very well the answer to this question, except in some very sophisticated versions of this duality, where actually, in context of some examples in ADS-CFT and so on, where actually we do have some picture for what's going on. And we do have some intuition of what the integrable model is and why it does correspond to some differential equation. But it's kind of fun that in these very, very simplest examples, like this anharmonic oscillator that you're going to play with, the origin of this integrable model and why exactly this integrable model and how we could have guessed is, I think, totally unknown. OK, I'll thank you. Thank you. Questions? Sorry? No, there's nothing as fancy as that. Suppose, no, it is. I don't know what's the simplest example. The simplest example might be the wave functions of the anharmonic oscillator. They are hard to find precisely because they are functions with this asymptotic. I mean, no one told you that if you take asymptotics, that the asymptotics are analytic, right? There could be some singularity at infinity, some essential singularity or something. No one tells you that if you just go asymptotically and continue, that this is the continuation of the function. The function is analytic, yeah. Do you have another microphone? Okay, so the question is, why do we have this Stokes phenomena? But this is, let me answer in private. It's kind of a longer discussion. What is Stokes phenomena and so on? More questions? OK, so we reconvene upstairs at 2:30 for more problems.